Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. While Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama battle it out, John McCain has been going strong on the campaign trail. He's spoken to inequality in Selma, given big speeches on global warming and the Supreme Court, and day in, day out, he's honing strategy and hammering away at the Democrats. This hour, On Point, we're turning the spotlight back on John McCain. You can join us. What do you hear from, see in the McCain campaign? But first today, we turn to the Democrats and yesterday's big win for Hillary Clinton in West Virginia. Ann Kornblut is national political correspondent for The Washington Post. She traveled with Senator Clinton in the Mountain State. She joins us now from Washington. Ann, a big win expected for Hillary Clinton there, and a big win she got. How are Democrats reading it?
Well, certainly everyone is giving her credit for having done well in West Virginia, which she did.
Well, to say the least.
And as you suggest, it was not unexpected. I think given what expectations were, it was not a big surprise. So there was no sort of upset storyline coming out of Tuesday night. And at the same time, the immediate pivot was to look at what the delegate count now is. So although she did very well in West Virginia, she doesn't seem to have earned enough delegates. In fact, she really couldn't have earned enough delegates to catch up with Barack Obama. And if you add up all the remaining states left to vote, now we're down to five, there are not really enough there for her unless she wins by astonishing margins of upward of 90% in each of those places for her to catch up with him. So obviously a big win in West Virginia. She emerged from the night making the only case she really could. It's a good one, which is that she's won the big important swing states that Democrats need in the general election, but she was hard-pressed to make the case that she had caught up or would do so anytime soon.
Hillary Clinton, though, last night, after her big win in West Virginia, still making the case that she would be the strongest candidate to score off against, well, probably John McCain.
I want to send a message to everyone still making up their mind. I am in this race because I believe I am the strongest candidate.
And Kornblut, who is Hillary Clinton, Senator Clinton, speaking to there exactly?
Well, not to the people in the room, I can tell you that. She thanked them, and then she turned quickly to talk to the superdelegates watching it on TV, specifically the undecided superdelegates. She's going to meet with some of them today in Washington, and who knows what will come of that. She's also meeting with her fundraising team. But she's really trying to persuade the people who haven't, the superdelegates who haven't yet gone for Barack Obama, to at least sit tight and to stop the kind of daily flood we've seen of superdelegates to him.
You know, it can be confusing to watch this because on the one hand, you've got Obama's camp and lots of political analysts saying he's got it sewn up. On the other hand, here's Hillary Clinton looking steadily into that camera and saying, look, I would be the strongest candidate. It's not too late. Is there a scenario in which she comes out on top? She comes out the candidate, Ann.
It's almost impossible to figure out what that would be and to describe it. Almost every situation I've heard, even from Clinton folks speaking candidly about what that situation would look like, involves some major unexpected stumble on Obama's part that radically changes the minds of superdelegates and reverses the trend away from him. That said, they do make the point, they've made it over and over now in the last few days and weeks, that quitters don't win. So the argument I've heard from people around her is, why not? Why not just see this whole thing out? She's making history as she goes. It certainly feels better to do this, to campaign every day, than it would to quit, especially given that she's winning. So it seems to be even less about winning the nomination than it is going out in the way she wants to.
What if Michigan and Florida are brought back into this equation? They moved their primaries up. They were ruled out by the Democratic powers that be. Clinton says she wants them counted. What if that should happen? Does that open up a scenario?
It doesn't. Again, the math remains difficult, even if you add them. It does not look like they're going to be seated at 100%. They might be seated proportionally, their proposals to seat them proportionally based on who won what, but not to seat the entire delegation, to reduce it proportionally. Even then, it's going to be hard for her. And it's hard for her on the superdelegate front, not just talking about the pledged delegates. Obama has overtaken her on the superdelegate front. She is also trying to win the popular vote. So she's going to continue on. If she continues on to Puerto Rico, she might be able to keep up with him in the popular vote. But on every front, it remains difficult for her.
A lot of attention being paid to the exit interviews that were done with West Virginia voters, and some people saying there's trouble for Barack Obama in those interviews, those exit polls.
No question. It's hard to say at this point. Well, there's trouble on a couple of different fronts. I would say the one that Democrats are fretting the most about are the people who voted for Clinton who say, no way would I vote for Obama. There were also exit interviews that said, showed large numbers of people who said that race was a factor in their deciding to vote for Clinton, saying that they would not vote for Obama. So those are two obviously large hurdles for him should he decide that West Virginia is going to be one of his target states in the fall if he is the nominee. So I think Democrats are hopeful that at least on the front of people who wouldn't vote for him simply because Hillary Clinton was their nominee, they hope they can overcome that. Race might be a greater hurdle.
Ann Kornblut, national correspondent for The Washington Post, with us from Washington. Ann, thanks very much for being here.
Thank you.
Oregon and Kentucky next Tuesday for the Democrats. Primaries there, Puerto Rico June 1st, Montana and South Dakota on June 3rd. And John McCain watching all of it. We're talking this hour about John McCain. He's been out of the spotlight but hot on the campaign trail. You can join the conversation. Have you been following the GOP's nominee in waiting? What do you make of McCain on the issues, of McCain's chances of succeeding George Bush, of McCain versus Obama, McCain versus Clinton? Joining me now from Washington is Jill Zuckman, national political correspondent for the Chicago Tribune. She's logged many miles on the Straight Talk Express with John McCain this primary season. Over Easter, she was in Kosovo with Cindy McCain. Welcome back, Jill. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Tom.
Give us some John McCain camp perspective on what's going on in this campaign season, both with his own campaign and with the Democrats' battle.
Well, I think there was a debate when John McCain wrapped up the Republican nomination and the Democrats were still going strong. And a lot of people felt like he was just going to fade into the background. No one would pay attention to him. It would be a terrible period for him. His campaign argued that this was an opportunity to raise some money, figure out what they were doing, get it together. I think their argument has had some validity because over the last couple of months, he's had a chance to go out, to introduce himself to voters, to talk about what he wants to talk about, not to be fighting with anybody else, to look statesmanlike. And in the meantime, his approval ratings have just risen higher and higher. His approval ratings are much higher than Clinton and Obama's. Now I think enough is enough, and we're seeing him and Senator Obama begin to engage.
Let's listen to the kind of message John McCain has been out there with while the Democrats were going at each other. He's done some campaigning in traditionally Democratic strongholds, courting the minority vote. We'll talk about that. Last month, April 21st, he kicked off his Time for Action tour in Selma, Alabama, talking about inequality.
This week, I'll be traveling to places in America that aren't enjoying the prosperity many other parts of America enjoy, but where people are walking a long, hard road to make sure that their children will know the opportunities that other American children possess. There are places that for too long suffered too many disadvantages, but where people of good character and stout hearts believe in the possibility of making the future better than the past, which, as we know, is the essence of the American dream.
John McCain in Selma, Alabama, on April 21st. Joe Zuckman, that doesn't exactly sound like a George W. Bush speech, but what about on economic policy? Is John McCain proposing something different from George Bush? I mean, inequality has grown during this president's term.
That's true. But Senator McCain is concerned that changing the tax structure or rolling back tax cuts that were given by President Bush would actually make this recession even worse. And he does acknowledge that we are most likely in a recession. So he's trying to keep things steady. He's hoping to spur economic growth by cutting taxes for corporations. It doesn't seem that much different from what President Bush has pursued during his time in office. I think what Senator McCain has really tried hard to do in the last few weeks is to be able to talk about the economy and talk about voters' pain and concerns in a way that's really empathetic, that he gets it. And that's a challenge. I mean, his strength is talking about foreign policy, the war, military affairs. I mean, that's his passion. And so this is something that he's working on.
We'll look at McCain on policy, but just to look at the polls for a second here, lots and lots of polls done, McCain versus Obama, imagine, McCain versus Clinton. When you look at there's all kinds of outcomes, but when you look at the bottom line, they show McCain trailing Obama on average by 4.5%, Clinton by 4.8%. How does his camp look at that? Is that surmountable? Does he have a real, real shot at the White House when the polls are running this way before we even get to the summer?
Well, Senator McCain himself says this is a huge challenge because the Republican brand is so badly damaged. People are really mad at Republicans right now. Yesterday we saw another solidly Republican congressional district get handed to the Democrats. This is the third one in a row in
Mississippi,
a special election.
Special election, yeah.
Exactly. I mean, that is not a very good omen for Republicans. But Senator McCain himself does much better than a generic poll for Republicans. I mean, he runs 18 to 20 points ahead of just, do you like Republicans? I think the polls right now matching McCain and Obama, McCain and Clinton, aren't quite that meaningful because we haven't seen that much engagement. Voters are still focused on the primaries. We're just not in the middle of it. I think it'll become clearer as we get to the fall.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the campaign of John McCain, out of the spotlight but in full gear, preparing to take on whoever comes out of the Democratic Party contest. We've been joined by Jill Zuckman, national political correspondent for the Chicago Tribune. She's spent a lot of time with John McCain in the Straight Talk Express and up in the air, in the bus, up in the air, all over the place. Right now, joining us from Alexandria, Virginia, is Tony Fabrizio. He's a Republican pollster and strategist. He was chief pollster and strategist for Bob Dole's 1996 presidential campaign. He's advised dozens of GOP candidates and the Republican National Committee. Tony Fabrizio, great to have you back. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me, Tom.
And with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point News analyst Jack Beatty, who's been watching John McCain on the trail. Jack, good to have you here.
Hello, Tom, Jill, and Tony.
Tony Fabrizio, what do you see in this candidate? Do you see a new kind of Republican presidential candidate on the stump with John McCain? And can he do it, given the really terrible poll numbers surrounding the GOP in general these days?
Well, you couldn't pick a worse environment for John McCain to try to be successful in. I think one of the things we need to recognize is that John McCain has spent the last 8 years plus molding himself and portraying himself as a different type of Republican, the independent maverick who speaks his mind. And that is serving John McCain very well now. That is allowing John McCain to run, 18 to 20 points ahead of generic Republicans. The question really becomes, is that 18 to 20 points that McCain is running ahead of what the Republican brand is currently, is that the outer limits of the flexibility of the electorate, or is there still more growth potential? So that 18 to 20 points now allows him to be competitive in all of the national polling. The question becomes, at the end of the day, is it the outer limits, or is there still more growth potential for him?
Tony, how do you see John McCain on the stump when he speaks to policies he would pursue as president? How is he trying to position himself there? And do you see a very different presidency from George Bush? As you know, the Democrats say this would be more of the same. He is saying he doesn't want to get rid of those tax cuts. He's also been talking about the environment, been talking about inequality we heard there, been talking about judicial nominees that he would make. What's the profile that's emerging in this on the campaign trail, on the stump, Tony?
I think that he is certainly trying to create distance between himself and the president. I believe his campaign recognizes that the connection on the war and the connection on taxes and the connection on several other issues where he supported the president, you know, opened the door for Democrat charges that this is just another third term of the Bush presidency. However, he has gone out of his way to differ with the president on things like global warming, campaign finance reform. I mean, there are a number of issues where McCain has staked out a position not only different than President Bush, but different than what Republicans are perceived as, hence, you know, only helping his independent maverick speaks his mind message. Can it be successful? At the end of the day, it's going to take a considerable amount of messaging and a considerable amount of money to push that message, because it's only going to get so far in the early coverage that he's received. One of the concerns I have is going to be the disparity in financial resources between Senator McCain and Senator Obama.
We'll look at that. But first, Jack Beatty, what do you hear from John McCain on the stump? The Democrats, are they fair in saying this will be a third Bush term, or do you hear something else emerging in his policies?
Well, you know, Tom, in this campaign, we've really seen two John McCains. There's the politically courageous McCain, who pushed last year's immigration bill even as it became toxic among Republicans, and the politically expedient McCain, who now supports the Bush tax cuts he opposed, the ethanol subsidy he opposed, etc. There's the honest straight talker, who said he doesn't understand economic issues as well as he should, and the candidate who, when Tim Russert quoted his words back to him, said, quote, "I don't know where you got that quote from. I'm very well versed in economics." There's the McCain who hit the highest moral note of the campaign, denouncing torture as wrong in the GOP debates, and the senator who voted for a Bush-backed bill that appears to permit the CIA to torture. There's the truth-telling McCain, the one who told the Michigan voters those old manufacturing jobs aren't coming back, and the candidate who sometimes seemed to want audiences to believe that just eliminating earmarks will come close to balancing the budget, which is a lot like saying that turning off the nightlight in the bathroom will reduce global warming. There's the candid McCain, who says the country needs to achieve energy independence so, quote, to prevent us from ever having to send our young men and women into conflict in the Middle East again. And the McCain, who says he meant the first Gulf War, not the Iraq War, then said he didn't mean that. Again and again, McCain is, by the way, by his shooting from the lip, you might say, is undercutting this image of maverick straight talker. And eventually, it seems to me, he's going to have the way he's campaigning is going to have caused problems for the narrative of his campaign. I am a straight talker.
And then there's the McCain we heard. I'll come right to you, Joe. But let's hear this tape from Wake Forest University, Winston-Salem, North Carolina, just last Tuesday, where he was reaching out to the GOP's conservative base and talking about the kind of judges he, McCain, would appoint to the Supreme Court.
I will look for people in the cast of John Roberts, Samuel Alito, and my friend, the late William Rehnquist, jurists of the highest caliber, who know their own minds and know the law and know the difference. My nominees will understand that there are clear limits to the scope of judicial power and clear limits to the scope of federal power.
Jill Zuckman, you've been on the bus with John McCain. Jack Beatty says there are several McCains on the campaign trail. Do you hear that tension in the conversation inside the McCain bubble? Are they saying, oh, this isn't really us, but we have to say it today to get this or that faction, or not?
No, I don't, actually. And I have to tell you, I was on the bus with him. I had the conversation with him where he said that stuff about the economy. And I think your listeners might like to know, we were actually talking about running mates, and we were having a conversation. What would you look for in a running mate? What do you want? And what he was really talking about was finding someone who would compliment him. You know, here he brings these incredible strengths. And while, you know, literally, if you look at those sentences, it doesn't look so good for him. He was actually saying, you know, I've never worked on Wall Street. I like the idea of having a running mate who has Wall Street experience, who knows more about the economy than I do. So, I mean, he's certainly saying a lot. He's said some things. The Democrats are looking for anything they can seize on to portray him as not a maverick, as not independent, as just another Republican. But, you know, in fact, one of the most, I think, courageous things he does every day is talk to reporters. He's one of the very few presidential candidates I know who's willing to have in-depth conversations about the issues. And that does cause him problems from time
to
time.
But has John McCain presented himself traditionally, Jill, as strong on economics, which have become so central to this campaign season?
Well, I think that the economy issue was creeping up in the late fall to the winter while he was campaigning in New Hampshire. It was not central to his campaign because, remember, the top issue in the country was Iraq, and that's primarily what he talked about every day. And that issue of the economy was just surpassing over the course of the winter months Iraq to the point that everybody's focused on the economy, and so he had to jump in on that too. I mean, his campaign has said they're going to focus exclusively on the economy and health care in the coming months because those are the top issues on voters' minds.
Here's a little bit from John McCain and Tim Russert. Going back and forth, they met on Meet the Press. Russert was quoting that, what do I know about the economy stuff? McCain said he didn't know where that came from. 3 days later, they squared off on Meet the Press, and McCain here takes it back.
Now I know where you got
I will
from.
Show you where I got the quote from. I got it from John McCain, and here it is. McCain is refreshingly blunt when he tells me, quote, I'm going to be honest. I know a lot less about economics than I do about military and foreign policy issues. I still need to be educated. Wall Street Journal, November 26, 2005. You repeated it to the Boston Globe in December of 07. You said it.
Tony Fabrizio, is the centrality of the economy now to this campaign season a problem for John McCain or not?
It's a problem for all Republicans. The real key here for Senator McCain, now that it looks like it's going to be he and Senator Obama, is not to make this race very issue-centric. And what I mean by that is get into a battle of the details of the plans. The key for Senator McCain is the contrast between he and Senator Obama. And I mean experientially, I mean leadership qualities, I mean stature, I mean gravitas, and I mean ideology. If John McCain is a maverick Republican, it is incumbent upon Senator McCain and the Republican apparatus to show what Barack Obama is. And that is not the centrist that he makes himself out to be, but a liberal former state senator from South Chicago. And so those beliefs that Obama brings to the table and his record are out of step with the American mainstream and would help Senator McCain not necessarily get into a battle of the details on health care and the economy, because we need to take a step back and be very honest about this as a party. We do not have a lot of credibility with voters when it comes to those issues, particularly given that we controlled both houses and the White House for several of these years as these things were occurring, and we still control the White House.
So it may be all about boxing up Obama. Let's hear from our listeners on just that front. From Woodstock, Virginia, Bob is calling. Hi, Bob. You're on the air.
Hello.
What do you know, Bob?
Well, I was going to mention, you had asked earlier what people thought of McCain. I got to be quite honest. I'm really impressed with him because he's breaking away from the traditional total 100% Republican line, which appeals to me more than the two Democratic candidates, because they're still sticking to the hardcore left way out there. And I would like to see that in politics today. I'd like to see people just get rid of the hardcore line and just start coming into the meet in the middle area. And it seems to me that he's doing that more than any of them.
Bob, how do you describe yourself as a Republican, Democrat, independent?
More of an independent. I mean, a conservative independent. I formerly served in the military and stuff, so I feel strong about those things. But I'm really fed up with the total one side and total other side. Nobody's really making compromises. They want to stand for their values, and I understand that. But no one's making real compromises to try to meet in the middle.
We've got it. Jack Beatty, what do you say? Bob and maybe others are looking for that meet in the middle candidate. Is John McCain, still giving them that? Bob says maybe he is.
that's the argument. The counter-argument is that in order to win the nomination, he's had to move substantially to the right on what we mentioned, taxes. There are other things as well. And that his positions are not really all that different, if you start to look at them, from President Bush's. Yes, he did make that environmental speech about the – and he's talking about some action there. It was very hard in saying that 8 years are not going to go by under his administration without some action on global warming, a slap at Bush. Mm. But that sort of thing, it seems to me, has been rare, and it can fairly be charged against him that he is – he, you know, from being a maverick over the last couple of years, he's transformed himself into a sort of Bush Republican.
Let's go to Jill. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. I was just going to say that the McCain campaign's, one of their strategies for painting Senator Obama is to note the contrast on this issue of bipartisanship, to say, while Senator Obama talks about it a lot, only Senator McCain has actually achieved it. And he certainly can point to a number of things throughout his career, such as campaign finance reform. He worked with the Democrats on that. Immigration reform, while it didn't go through, he was part of a bipartisan group working on that. I mean, there have been a number of examples over the years, and they're going to try really hard to suggest that Senator Obama is just all talk and no action.
Tony Provizio, what about McCain and, let's say, Obama and the independent vote out there, if we can call it a swing vote? How do you see their relative strengths when it comes to that?
I think that right now Barack Obama is getting the benefit of the doubt from independents. In fact, when you look at a number of the national surveys, you'll notice that Senator McCain performs roughly the same against Hillary Clinton as he does against Barack Obama. The interesting thing is when you look underneath the numbers, and in fact in a number of the surveys I looked at, you notice that Senator McCain performs better among Democrats. Democrats garners more of their votes than Obama does of Republicans, versus Clinton, who garners more Democrat votes than Barack Obama does. Yet McCain does better with independents against Clinton. Obama does better with independents against McCain. So one of the keys here is going to be, can Obama hold on to those independents? And judging from the last caller that we had, it appears that McCain's strategy or McCain's imagery and the, you know, promoting of that imagery as part of his strategy is working. You have people who are centrist, who are independents, who are seeing a guy who is willing to step away from party orthodoxy to take courageous positions and meet people in the middle to get things done on things people want taken care of.
Jill, what about the McCain campaign? They have to be looking forward to, if it's Obama, to battling over that independent vote. There is, of course, that longtime maverick reputation of McCain, but do they still see it as strong, and how does it stack up against Obama has his own kind of appeal to a new politics, which is aimed at the independent voter in this country. How does the McCain campaign see that?
The McCain campaign feels like Senator McCain's brand as an independent, a maverick, somebody who thinks for himself and doesn't just follow ideology or party orthodoxy. They believe that's very, very strong and that people get that. Now, it's the Democrats' strategy to rip that scab off and to say, no, 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 he's really just a conservative. And certainly during the primaries, McCain spent a lot of time trying to persuade Republicans that he is a conservative. So that is going to be a real tension. I mean, the McCain campaign is going to try to highlight his independence, and one of the places they do that, it was on the Iraq war, by saying, you know, when no other Republican could say so, John McCain was saying, you're not doing the war the right way. This is all wrong. You know, he was practically cast out of the party. And they're hoping that if they emphasize that enough, voters will find that appealing.
Let's get one more call here before the break from Marshalltown, Iowa. Tom, we've just got half a minute. What do you see?
What do I see is, come on, who are we kidding? The Republicans are going to run ads, and okay, McCain won't run them directly. Oh, I don't got nothing bound. They're going to run ads that make the Swift Boat ads look like cream puff ads, okay? We all know that's what's going to happen. McCain will claim he has nothing to do with it, but come on, everyone knows that's the way they're going to go. And anyone who doesn't think that's going to happen is just living in a dream.
And who are they going to be aimed at, Tom? Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton? Tom's gone. He's already off thinking of dreaming of swift boats. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the campaign of John McCain. Out of the spotlight as Democrats have been battling, but in full gear. Jill Zuckman's with us from the Chicago Tribune. She's been on the McCain bus and in the air with John McCain. Tony Fabrizio is here, Republican pollster and strategist, and our own Jack Beatty. Let's go to caller Jason in Londonderry, Vermont. Hi, Jason. You're on the air.
Hi there. As I was listening earlier, I was thinking, I remember when listening to someone talk about the Gore-Bush campaign of 2000, and somebody said that one of the reasons Bush did so well, it helped him, was that he was very accessible to the media, and he was friendly, and so that came through in the reporting. And Gore had to keep his distance, especially with the Clinton debacle earlier.
Chris Matthews called the media John McCain's base, half jokingly.
Right. So that's what I wanted to say, is that I feel like, first of all, he's benefited from all the focus on the Democrats, and especially the Reverend Wright thing most recently. And McCain has kind of gone along and spread his message. And I don't think, it seems to me, he spent so much time pandering to the religious conservatives. I mean, this Hagee guy is so much more inflammatory than Reverend Wright is. And it's not even been there, but his... saying that the surge is working, and I think things are not going well. We're bombing, parts of Baghdad right now.
So you think maybe he's getting too?
And I want to say that story isn't being covered. It's not the concern of the voters, because it's not really being carried through in the media. And I feel like you got to put pressure on those guys.
Well, let's look at a couple of those right here. Of course, Barack Obama took a big, long barrage for his former pastor, Jeremiah Wright, and there was Pastor John Hagee, Cornerstone Church in San Antonio, Texas, who has been very outspoken on a number of fronts with some pretty blistering comments about the Catholic Church. Just yesterday, he was out saying he was sorry for that if he offended anybody. But Jack Beatty, it was pretty hot stuff while he was sending it in, and John McCain was taking his endorsement.
He was, and he sought his endorsement. And for a long time, people noticed that there was this discrepancy. The right matter was being hit frequently, but not much attention to the Hagee business. Now, of course, they're not comparable, but they are comparable in this way. If Minister Farrakhan, who's called Judaism a, quote, gutter religion, had endorsed Obama, and Obama had said, "I don't want any part of this guy," we'd be properly if he had said, "I'll accept that," that would be outrage. But we have with Hagee someone who said something very similar about the Catholic Church, endorsing McCain, and McCain saying, "Well, I don't endorse his views, but I'll accept his support." That was the kind of double standard, I think, that people saw. And, just yesterday in the Post, Dan Balz, their political reporter, said, the media is going to start looking at McCain now because the focus has been on the Democrats. And I think he has his stumbling around on the campaign trail, his statement about, we should stay in Iraq for 100 years, these careless statements that he keeps being made, those haven't been getting the kind of focus I think they will get as the campaign intensifies.
Of course, John Hagee, he's apologized now if he offended anyone, but it was hard not to be offended, I suppose, if you're a Roman Catholic. It's all over YouTube. Influential Texas televangelist. He's endorsed John McCain. Here's just a bit of a sermon in which he talked about how a great whore riding a terrible beast represents the Catholic Church. Here's some of what Reverend Hagee had to say.
God says the day is going to come when I'm going to cause this beast to devour this apostate system. So you can say very clearly that while the church is in heaven, this false religious system is going to be totally devoured by the Antichrist.
Tony Fabrizio, how do you see it? Has Reverend Hagee's backing off solved the Hagee problem for John McCain? And where does he stand with the religious right of the Republican Party at this point?
I think there is an uncomfortable truce that exists between Senator McCain and the religious right inside the Republican Party, and a lot of that goes back to obviously the 2000 campaign, and some of it continued for the last 8 years because there was some uncertainty about what Senator McCain would do on judges and how he's voted on judges and campaign finance reform. You know, there have been a number of incidents, stem cell research, where Senator McCain has strayed from, quote-unquote, the party line. I think, however, that they are very quickly coming to realize that Senator McCain may not be perfect, but he is far superior to his likely opponent, Barack Obama, as they learn more about Barack Obama. And I think that as knowledge of Barack Obama's record becomes more common, you will see a lot more, while it won't be throwing a love fest for John McCain, it'll be a lot more enthusiastic support because of what Barack Obama would represent in the White House.
Jill Zuckman, what do you see on the trail? A conservative base coming out for John McCain, or being wooed by Obama, or something in between?
Tom, I went out to Colorado Springs, which is the home of Dr. Dobson and his followers, a very big evangelical community, and I talked to voters there. And
James Dobson with Focus on the Family out there.
Yes, exactly. And there were some voters who said they just could not vote for John McCain. But most said, well, I'm not going to vote for Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama. You know, I'm going, you know, he's what we've got and I can live with it. So I think that they have nowhere to go. And hopefully, as the Republicans view it, they will be so fired up by the Democratic nominee that they will just coalesce around McCain. And I think the McCain campaign feels pretty good about where things stand right now with the conservative base. But I have to respond to something that Jack said earlier about the 100-year comment. I don't think that was stumbling around or a mistake. It's classic John McCain. He said it at a town hall meeting, I believe in Salem, New Hampshire. And what he likes to do at town hall meetings is be provocative. He believes it's part of his straight talk persona. So he kind of gets into it with people. When there was this man that stood up and was talking about us being in Iraq, and McCain said, 50 years, 100 years. And then he went on to explain, as long as the troops are not there being hurt or killed or, you know, there's violence, it's fine if we have some sort of presence there. So I think there's a little more to it than just a mistake.
But there's clearly articulated an attitude of hanging in. Let's listen directly to it. Listeners can decide for themselves. January 3rd, town meeting in Derry, New Hampshire. McCain asked here by a voter, and you'll hear it, how long U.S. troops should stay in Iraq. Then his answer.
President Bush has talked about our staying in Iraq for 50 years.
Maybe 100. We've been in South Korea. We've been in Japan for 60 years. We've been in South Korea for 50 years or so. That'd be fine with me,
so
as long as Americans are not being injured or harmed or wounded or killed. Then it's fine with me. I hope it would be fine with you if we maintain a presence in a very volatile part of the world where Al Qaeda is training, recruiting, and equipping and motivating people every single day.
Tony Fabrizio, John McCain says, well, I mean, as long as Americans aren't being injured or harmed or wounded or killed, still the 100-year number stands there. Does the clarification work for him, even with Republicans or not?
First of all, I don't think it's an issue with Republicans. I think one of the fundamental differences here is that Republicans still, by and large, support the war and are supportive of completing the mission there. I think, look, there's no question that Senator McCain's position on the war is problematic to some. However, if Senator McCain's position on the war was a disqualification for him to be president, he would not even be within striking range of Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama, who hold opposite positions than him on the war. Obviously, Americans see Senator McCain and see his position, but they are basing their decision on other factors. People who are opposed to war and want us out right now are never going to vote for Senator McCain anyway. But it is the fact that Senator McCain has the experience, comparatively, particularly to Senator Obama,
while they may not necessarily agree with 100% of what Senator McCain says on the war, they think he is in a better position to get us out of that war rather than somebody that's inexperienced.
Jack Beatty, the war in poll after poll, very unpopular, and yet, as Tony says, there's McCain. If the war were a mortal wound for him, he wouldn't be anywhere near where he is right now, and there he stands, even with that number 100 ringing out there.
That's true, but the Democrats are already running ads on that 100-year comment. And the point about it is that, yes, in context, it sounds sensible when you get the whole context. But, of course, you know, in substance, it's hard to imagine a time when Americans wouldn't be the target of terrorism in these countries, in Iraq. There was no terrorism in Japan or Germany. But beyond that, I mean, that may count as a kind of classic political gaffe. That's what I meant about it. I mean, Barry Goldwater in 1964 made an offhand remark about, you know, Social Security, abolishing Social Security, eliminating it in New Hampshire. It had a context. He went on to say things. But boy, oh boy, the Democrats didn't let anybody remember the context. The ads were all about the statement. And similarly here, this was a real hostage to fortune he gave out there.
Let's go to Mark in Niagara Falls, New York. Hi, Mark. You're on the air.
Hi. Hello. I'm a Democrat. I would identify myself as a Democrat, and I was seriously considering voting for McCain. But when he seemed to flip-flop or waffle or whatever you want to call it on the issue of torture, I think torture is ineffectual and immoral, and I think if he had stuck to his guns, he would have at least this Democrat considering him.
Now, he stood very strong against torture. Has he, Jill, has he waffled on torture, as Mark says?
Well, a little bit. He passed an amendment to a bill and got it attached to legislation that was sent to President Bush that would have insisted that the military stick to the Army field manual when it comes to dealing with prisoners. And President Bush managed to throw it out somehow. He certainly talks about it a lot, about how torture doesn't work, and makes jokes about the show 24 and how you're trying to get information from someone and you say, oh, you're not going to tell me, and then they shoot him in the knee and then the person spills everything. But the fact is, he did concede that the CIA could use other methods, not in the Army field manual. And I think that is essentially opening the door for torture. And I believe that's probably what the caller is referring to.
Tony, so there's a kind of a shift in position on an issue that some voters like Mark hold very important. What about the way the McCain campaign is going to attempt to portray Barack Obama, if indeed he emerges finally as the Democrats' candidate? What do you expect, Tony?
I think, you know, there is something to be said about what the Clintons are saying, that Barack Obama ultimately is going to be unelectable. I think Barack Obama, you talk about getting a free ride. Somebody mentioned before about John McCain had gotten a free ride from the media. If anybody has gotten a free ride from the media, it's Barack Obama. If you think about it, what does the average American know about Barack Obama? Very little they know about Barack Obama. John McCain has been a familiar figure to them for the last 8 years. From his previous presidential run to things he has said and positions he has taken, from immigration to campaign finance reform to judges. I mean, there's a whole list of things. Barack Obama's a recent phenomenon. And the Barack Obama that he portrays himself to be on the campaign trail is very, very much different than the Barack Obama that his voting record portrays, both as a U.S. senator and as a state senator in Illinois, both of which are going to be fair game for the Republicans, for anybody. And there are a number of disturbing votes and positions in those in his past that just defy explanation. And you want to talk about trying to explain your way out of your position on torture? Imagine trying to explain your way out of your position on domestic violence and voting to let domestic batterers free or not force them to serve jail time. Those types of things are very difficult to explain to middle America.
Jack Beatty, how do you see it? Barack Obama, if he's the one, Hillary Clinton still hanging in there, big win in West Virginia. She says, come on, I'm the really strong candidate here. But if it's Barack, do you hear the swift boat engines revving and revving well, I guess they can't riff fairly, but do you see vulnerability?
Oh, indeed. Substantial vulnerability. A New York Times story Sunday quoted many people saying, we've got the ads right now. We're ready to hit Obama about his record in the Illinois Senate in particular. There's apparently a 50-page report done, opposition report, done by a man who had a bow out of the Republican race in Illinois that's got a lot of stuff about his votes in there. We're going to hear a lot about that. But in the end, this is a change election. 80% of the American people now say the country is on the wrong track. The Democrats are going to say John McCain is John McSane. It's the same track. And the change contrast is going to be driven by a 46-year-old candidate against a 71-year-old candidate. And so the zeitgeist may favor the Democrats. Maybe that it won't, but I think that's how the race is going to shape up.
Jill, our time runs down. We've just got half a minute. 46 versus 71 when it comes to age. What about potential VP candidates? Who's John McCain looking favorably on? What neck of the woods?
He's keeping it very, very close. I believe that Senator McCain is basically running his vice presidential search and coordinating with his campaign manager, and they are not having a whole big committee going through this. I mean, there's certainly lots of people who you can guess might be in the mix. There's big questions about whether he would choose somebody who's so much younger than him that it would look like it's his son or grandson standing next to him. So it's not clear what he's going to do. It's a very big decision. His campaign knows it's a very big decision, and that it has the potential to reassure voters that if anything were to happen to him, there would be someone good to step in.
Younger, but not too much younger. And there goes the campaign of John McCain as the Democrats battle on. Hillary Clinton with a big win in West Virginia yesterday, and only a few more to go. Joe Zuckman with the Chicago Tribune, who's been following McCain campaign. Joe, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks, Tom.
And Tony Fabrizio, Republican pollster and strategist with us from Alexandria, Virginia. Tony, always great to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Jack Beatty, thanks for being here, sir.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.